Welcome to Quillsword Blogcast. Which is more important, Israel or Ukraine? To the U.S., Ukraine hands down. More details? Seriously? The question wasn't rhetorical? I define political important as affects real people. For the majority of people, just wanting to be well-informed, good citizens, that's the best possible definition. If an issue or event doesn't affect people or only affects a few, unless you were one of the few, that thing isn't politically important enough to spend bandwidth on learning about it. But it doesn't serve when talking about the most of the nation-state stuff. Nation-states usually don't make news yelling at each other unless a large number of people are affected. But just because the neighbors are feuding doesn't mean it's important to you. The U.S. is that one neighbor that gets called to calm down the fussing, which, of course, complicates things. On one level, everything is kind of important to the U.S. Eventually, we end up with the most in most discussions, so it's really helpful to have some idea of what's going on. On another, most things are not important to the U.S., as few international matters directly affect the U.S. The U.S.'s solution is that we pay hordes of analysts to study every podunk country on the planet so that we have good information and analysis on that one oddball occasion that podunk becomes internationally relevant. That way, the executive can safely ignore podunk and deal with a ton of other stuff that actually needs his attention. Neither Ukraine nor Israel are podunk. Both are important to the U.S. in very different ways. Israel is a long-standing ally and an important partner in the Middle East. The U.S. will not be shelving its relationship with Israel anytime in the next several decades. Ukraine is a linchpin in a much bigger alliance group and international struggle. Russia is a threat to 30-plus allies in Europe and a destabilizing force worldwide. Israel doesn't need a whole lot of help here. We're actually more help on the PR front. Or should be. Oh yes, we sent two aircraft carriers and we'll send aid, but Israel's needs aren't all that great, relatively speaking. They don't want or need American boots on the ground right now. But at the end of the day, Israel isn't simply as strategically important for the U.S. right now. I know, disappointing, isn't it? Well, cheer up. The U.S. does tons of stuff that isn't strategically important every day. The question was, which is more important, not which will the U.S. support? The U.S. is a big nation state and it can rub its tummy and pat its head while skipping and chewing gum. But even the U.S. has to prioritize, or try to, and some important things are more important than others. Let's deal with the elephant in the room. Russia is not our friend. Russia wants to be the sole superpower, and not for good reasons. It's long and complicated, and you can search for Peter Zion all by yourself. Suffice it that Russia is not playing nice, and Mearsheimer is just wrong about NATO expansion. Ukraine is a very cheap, yes really, bulwark against a host of issues stemming from Russia's aggression and imperialism. Yes, imperialism. No, Putin doesn't seem to think of himself as an emperor, but Russia is clearly building an empire. Arguably, it was always an empire of a weird sort. Calling your leader an emperor does not make a nation-state an empire. Calling your leader president doesn't make your nation-state not an empire. Empires are better defined in the modern era as authoritarian and aggressively growth-oriented, especially in terms of territory. Empires subjugate in order to incorporate. Russia fits this model frighteningly well. Look, Iran is a pain in the backside, but it has no hope of dominating the Middle East at this point. It can and will make life miserable for as much of the Middle East as is possible in its pursuit of regional dominance. Iran will use Israel as its scapegoat as it strives to destabilize and reshape the Islamic world, most especially the Middle East. Ooh, sounds scary. If you're in the Middle East, it is. For Israel, it's a massive problem. It's even a bigger problem for Saudi Arabia, and will get much worse if the U.S. continues to lose interest in the region. Think of it this way. If your dad is glued to the TV, your brother is going to suddenly become a royal pain in your backside. Exact same thing. Who said nation states were grown up? But will Iran be able to set off a region-wide conflict? Nah. They'd have done that already long since if they could. Syria is screwed. Gaza is doomed. The West Bank will be on its bestest behavior to not get caught in the backlash. The rest of the Middle East will busily find other things to do. Oh, the people in the region may be really riled up. That's one of Iran's goals. But the nation states aren't democratic at all, and none of them see the Palestinian-Arab cause as a winning proposition any longer. They're running out of oil and don't have time for regional wars. They need to normalize trade relations within the region, and that includes Israel. They have to build out real economies, and incessant warfare prevents that. The folks in power aren't interested in furthering Iran's dreams or in destroying Israel. That was their grandfather's war. Also, the U.S. isn't disinterested enough. I know everyone thinks Iraq and Afghanistan wars were a waste. They weren't. There are no Middle Eastern nation states that want to play with PO-ing the U.S. ever again. Even if we do eventually go home, the U.S. humiliated Iraq twice and Afghanistan once. In a region where face matters, that alone disincentivizes playing chicken with the United States. But the whole being invaded and losing massively militarily damages everything rulers care about. No thanks, they don't want to play anymore. Israel has had enough, and it isn't using the old playbook. Gaza isn't going to be occupied. It very likely will be depopulated. Calm down, the Israelis don't need to use bullets. Gaza is a castle with its curtain walls backwards. It can't do anything important, food, water, energy, on its own. Cutting Gaza in half is sufficient, which they accomplished today. The Israelis can let the Gazans come to them, provide humanitarian aid, and embassy access for people to begin immigrating. Immigrating with an E. It means leaving. So there's not a lot the U.S. needs to do. Supply military aid and humanitarian aid, as well as maintaining that big scary military presence so Hezbollah doesn't decide to do something really stupid and Yemen confines itself to flashy and useless displays. This is relatively low bandwidth for the U.S. But Russia and Iran! Yep, Russia thinks it benefits from the distraction. I'm not so sure. But let's assume that it does. So what? Gaza isn't Ukraine, and Iran can't support Hamas sufficiently to keep this conflict hot for very long. Plus, all the usual suspects are clamoring for a ceasefire. Hint, they aren't getting it this time. So the shelf life of this crisis is looking pretty short. By March, we won't be talking about Israel, but we will be looking at the Russian elections and the Ukraine conflict. Winter wars are boring anyway. As I said earlier, I don't think this distraction actually benefits Russia so much. Without a lot of attention on the issue, the U.S., the opponents to Ukraine aid will be less visible. They might disrupt some aid, but I doubt it. Johnson, the new speaker, he's unlikely to block bills getting to the floor, because Republicans that support Ukraine can cost him the speakership exactly as their opponents took down McCarthy. If anything, bills are likely to be more targeted and harder to oppose. The hard part is for the House to start learning how to write bills that can pass. They haven't done that in a long time. Regardless, the opposition isn't strong enough to shut down aid, nor has Trump made that much of a campaign issue out of this. The U.S. won't pull out of in 2024 as Russia hopes, and it just might, mind you, get more involved. No, not boots on the ground, but keeping pressure on Russia hurts the Iranian efforts to hurt Israel. Iran's economic bandwidth is limited, and it can only supply so many drones. Having two customers with bottomless need is going to overwhelm the Iranian production capability fairly quickly. So keeping Iran in the drone business is a cheap way to keep them busy. It has the added benefit of being very likely to become a source of friction with the Russians. Iran needs the Russians more than it needs Hezbollah. Sanction busting ain't cheap or easy, and Russia is one of Iran's main behind-the-scenes partners in that regard. Now remember, nation-states are resilient, so they aren't going to go bust or be at each other's throats next week. But the more grit in the gears, the sooner those gears will fail. But why is there so much bipartisan support for Ukraine? Don't the Republicans oppose support for Ukraine? Well, some do, but they are the minority of the party. Most old-school Republicans are invested differently. Oh, stop overreading that. It doesn't mean that they are corrupt, just that their interests lie in international and defense sectors. The foreign aid bad crowd isn't a majority, nor do they have a lot of expertise in the international field. And don't overread that either. They aren't ignorant. This just isn't their bailiwick. Which explains why Mearsheimer is so popular with the anti-Ukraine crowd. No, I'm not anti-Mearsheimer. The guy's just wrong. It happens daily to us human types. He misidentified NATO expansion as a critical issue for Russia when it was in fact a wedge issue. The critical issue is NATO's existence. And yes, invading Ukraine majorly backfired here. And Russia uses NATO expansion to try to drive a wedge, or three, into NATO. Or rather, it did until Russia shot itself in the foot invading Ukraine. You need a little background to spot Mearsheimer's era, and most of the anti-foreign aid crowd lacks that background. It's not a dig. I guarantee everyone has a blind spot. This just happens to be theirs. So why do the other Republicans support Ukraine? There's no one true answer. Humans come up with lots of reasons to do the same thing. The main general answer seems to be a combination of being Eurosympathetic and being more pro-defense. The more specific answer is that a proportion of these guys are just more knowledgeable about the international relations and the danger of Russia's invasion poses to both our allies and ultimately to the U.S. And since most old-school Republicans are like me and older than dirt, they remember their parents talking about World War II, and some remember or even served in Vietnam. Wars that had deep, lasting impacts on Americans, and that does change the picture for us. So let's break it down. Why is Ukraine important to U.S. interests? Number one, the U.S. has deep cultural, trade, defense, and security ties to Europe. No other region can drag the U.S. into war faster or more intensely. Number two, trade with Europe is massive. While the U.S. is not dependent on trade, $358 billion in exports ain't hay. On the blog, it appears as imports in the linked chart. Imports by Europe from the U.S. are exports by the U.S. to Europe. We import even more from Europe. Those German cars and Swiss chocolates are just the tip of the iceberg. Number three, NATO. The infamous Article 5. Now, Article 5 being invoked might not mean going to war, but it very likely might. We would rather not test this one, as there are no good outcomes. We either go to war, almost certainly with Russia, or NATO collapses and we end up cleaning up the mess. Number four, Russia really isn't our friend. Russia routinely uses propaganda to manipulate the U.S., and sometimes it even works. Not every harebrained piece of idiocy that comes over the internet comes from Russia. We can manage idiocy all by ourselves, thank you very much. But a lot of crazy things that seem to catch fire are in fact amplified by Russian and Chinese trolls and bots. Let Russia win, and this, along with other Russian manipulations, will only get worse. Number 5. Russia may not be able to militarily attack the U.S., but they have an enormous capability to attack the U.S. asymmetrically. That means using other means to hurt the U.S. Sanctions are a familiar asymmetrical attack, but there are a lot more options. Destroying undersea infrastructure, cyber attacks, and propaganda are all possibilities and all can do enormous damage. You'll note that at least one of them already has. The more Russia succeeds by being aggressive, the more emboldened the Russians will be. Eventually, they get cocky enough to attack the U.S., and this doesn't bode well for anyone. Number 6. European destabilization has historically led to massively bloody wars. If Russia wins, Eastern Europe is likely to destabilize. It sounds all fancy, but it boils down to what happened at the beginning of the invasion in Ukraine repeats all over Eastern Europe in numbers not seen since World War II. Eastern Europeans have made it very clear that they do not wish to be ruled by Russia. If Western Europe and the U.S. back out on Ukraine, Eastern Europeans will begin to seriously wonder just how strong NATO actually is. A trickle of immigrants from Eastern Europe to Western Europe will start and likely become a flood that can and likely will destabilize all of Europe. Or we can just keep shoveling useful stuff across the Ukraine border and let Russia bash its own head into that brick wall. The risk of escalation is minuscule. If Russia were going to use nukes, they would have done it already. Or at least done a lot more along those lines. Saber rattling isn't a real threat. As long as Ukraine can hold out, Russia is going to keep doing enormous damage to itself. For the U.S., this is a win-win. Russia diminishes its strength and influence, and the U.S. makes even more money. Oh, didn't I mention that? Yeah, we're benefiting like crazy on this one. And best of all, no one begrudges us. Well, except France. But they begrudge just about everything. How? Well, most of those aid packages get spent in the U.S. Better yet, a lot of the initial aid packages were focused on other Eastern European nations. Namely, those willing to supply Ukraine with all their old Russian stuff, which was almost all of them. Those nations didn't have any nifty Western stuff to replace all their military equipment with, so the U.S. backfilled their stockpiles from our own stockpiles. That, my friends, will reap dividends for at least 5 decades. Why? Simple. We sent our old stuff that they could handle as NATO members. That benefits them because the F-35 has an insanely long logistics tail that even Poland would have difficulty with if we just replaced their entire airframe stock. But older, manageable systems give them the stuff they need now and a way forward to getting the brighter, shinier stuff later. Stuff they will buy from us. In the meantime, they will need software updates and logistics training and training updates and all sorts of spare parts. We are in business, gang, supplying military hard and software that Eastern European NATO members have been drooling over since the 1990s. Basically, they just got their first real Xbox and now they're in the market for all the best games. Most U.S. foreign aid reaps soft dividends, connections and trust that benefit us but are hard to define in dollars. Ukraine aid has already been yielding hard dividends as well as soft. Russia takes itself to the cleaners. Eastern Europe becomes much more Western and American aligned. The U.S. makes money in the process, not seeing the downside for the U.S. It would have been a lot better if we could have skipped all the bloodshed, though. For Ukraine, for Europe, and for the U.S., not having real wars is always the best outcome. Wish it were always the possible outcome.